Certo? Did you go for more?
For more?
Movies now. Movie time. The first sequence I want to show you is about let me see, I have to prepare a little bit different for remote students. I will share this movie on the Blackboard, so we did those upload, but you can look at them as well. Now let me first change the setup that both screens are showing the same. Now this is true. So the first one I want to show you is on trust. Why doesn't it work? Yes, this is full. I go to the loudspeaker.
You have to have trust that the person you're talking to from the... And now it's a little bit more difficult to do that counterterrorism work because governments don't believe that if they talk to the United States anymore, the United States can keep a secret. And, you know, in the intelligence business and in diplomacy, you have to have trust that the person you're talking to from the United States, if you're giving them classified secret information, you have to have trust that they'll keep that information secret. And that trust was blown by WikiLeaks. There are other hacktivist groups that have great motivation, that are pro-environment, against pollution, and other similar causes, and they hack their way into companies and get their records and put them online. So hacktivism is a new phenomenon. It's not crime, although it technically violates the law. It's people using hacking techniques for a political cause or a...
Yes. So you have seen here about trust. What is the importance of this little sequence? When WikiLeaks is leaking information on whatever purpose, when your enterprise comes by hacktivism or something like that into the newsline, trust is gone. And he said that intelligence business, diplomacy, national governments, also CSERTs, computer emergency response teams, need kind of trust to share the information. Ideal situation, one incident has happened, for instance, in the community of Norway, and everybody knows about it, and it doesn't happen a second time with a Norwegian company on the same way and loses money of that. This is the ideal situation. This does work only when they keep the secret inside and don't expose others, and when they react properly. So trust is an extremely important issue when it comes to threat intelligence, to sharing of vulnerabilities, of attack information between the different players. And it's often discussed whether we share too much information, whether we share too less information, and this is unclear up to now. If we will have time, I can show you also more in-depth information sharing trust presentation. But I think make now a couple movies and we'll go to this later on if there is time. I made some relevant contribution to the on policy side and academic side to the information sharing in trusted circles in incident response, vulnerability sharing, and so on. But remember trust. If trust is gone, the sharing stops and nobody can any more profit from mutual advantages in type of incidents. The next sequence consists of three movies. First, I explain why it happened, or what happened, and then the final policy reaction.
The nation's power grid, water utilities, air traffic control systems, and financial services companies, all vulnerable to cyber attacks from China, Russia, and hackers acting on behalf of Russia and other countries. A dramatic attack capable of shutting down one or all of those systems, says NSA Chief Admiral Michael Rogers, not a question of if, but when.
The cyber challenges we're talking about are not theoretical. This is something real, and that has the potential to lead to some truly significant, almost catastrophic failures if we don't take action.
The preparation, says Admiral Rogers, have already begun. Foreign nations as well as non-state actors working on their behalf carrying out recon missions on systems to seek out and test vulnerabilities. A successful attack could come at any time, taking down the nation's power grid, for instance, piece by piece.
The lights go out. Do we stop pumping water? Does that mean they already had the capability to flip the switch if they wanted to?
There shouldn't be any doubt in our minds that there are nation states and groups out there that have the capability to do that.
Cyber attacks have already struck some of the U.S. government's most sensitive systems. In late October, attacks targeted the White House unclassified email system, with Russia or Russian entities cited as the most likely suspects. And earlier this week, another attack disabled the State Department's email. The only defense, Admiral Rogers argued, is preparing to strike back. Defense, he says, is a losing strategy.
We need to define what would be offensive, what's an act of war. Those are all issues we're trying to come to grips with right now.
Wow. A lot of information in these 2 minutes. Defense is a losing strategy. I would say defense only is a losing strategy. Protect is defense. Detect is respond. How much you respond is up to the actor to decide. They really want to threaten each other, and this is between China, India, Russia, America. All of them are really deep into this. You have capabilities which shows the others. First time I have seen this, April 9, I think 2009, that in the Wall Street Journal was published that they found foreign code. You will see them later in the incident. This is a sign that really something odd has happened. Foreign code in the IT system of the electrical grid. And they found out that other nations could turn off their national power grid remotely. No notice, just turn off. And of course they learned, U.S. learned from that several lectures. One is that when Iran was about to sign the nuclear disarmament contract, if they wouldn't have signed, their system would be turned off from American cyber attacks. They published this in the newspaper and would have attacked the plant. And obviously, USA decided to disclose this information to show that they don't negotiate without plan B. Always have a plan B in place. And plan B is physical attack and destroy, in this case. And I don't think they published it because they wanted that people know about this case, but they needed it to make pressure in another negotiation situation. This is how policy works. Credible source. So April 9, 2009, I said this capability was shown. I have another video showing a little bit more in this area.
We'd actually cause a pipe rupture in this process.
That pipe is filled with water, but it could be filled with oil, even acid.
There are safeties in here such that when that isolationist valve is closed, we should also turn off this pump.
That didn't happen because these energy researchers were able to hack the controller.
You can't do anything. You are, as an operator, you are completely locked out.
It's the same kind that's used at oil and gas facilities. That means this hack could cause gas pipes and water tanks to explode or overflow. It could also represent modern-day warfare, taking down major infrastructure by infiltrating the code that makes it run.
You can definitely cripple an entire country through cyber means and attacking infrastructure.
Kennedy says that if there's a conflict with Syria, Damascus could respond in cyberspace.
They have some very big allies that have a lot of decent capabilities out there, such as Iran and Russia. And they're definitely capable of launching, you know, some sort of cyber capability towards us in the United States.
With this hack, researchers from security consultancy firm Cymation took control of signals to change what an operator sees, to highlight the vulnerabilities they recently presented their findings publicly.
And as this thing is actually filling, we can make it look to the operator that our process is actually lowering.
Hackers could do it because the unit is connected to the internet with a public IP address. So are other parts of America's infrastructure that are remotely controlled, like trains and water towers.
They don't have these security controls in place.
How does this manifest itself into the lives of everyday people?
It could mean that a train runs off the tracks and causes a huge accident. There's lots of kind of unpredictable things that could happen because these systems are in a lot of different areas and a lot of different industries.
And the United States is already on the defensive after a group calling itself the Syrian Electronic Army took responsibility for disrupting web traffic on major news sites like the New York Times.
Come on!
No one's going to be able to challenge the military from a, you know, pure boots on ground or, you know, actual straight, you know, warfare to warfare type situation. But what countries can do is really impact us from a more of an information side of the house, so what we do electronically.
No surprise in Washington, billions of dollars are committed to combat the growing cyber threat. In fact, the government has designated October as National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Lori Siegel, CNN Money, New York.
So what you have seen is that critical infrastructure can be attacked, and this is a famous fact at the moment, that countermeasures are difficult, very difficult, not really good answers, and we are elaborating on this. A lot of researchers, like in the Critical Infrastructures Conference, 10 to 12 papers dealt on securing SCADA system against the internet. Very difficult task. When the Internet of Things is coming, even more difficult. And how to protect these assets. We have some responses how to do this in putting them in containment and have secure bridges to the internet. But the security level of those bridges are not satisfactory at the moment. And especially Internet of Things sensors are directly connected to the internet with nearly no or absolutely no security. Let us work on this scenario I want to show you. So April 9 was published. Electric grid is vulnerable. And then when this is published, it was detected probably 1 or 2 years earlier. And then the administration starts to work. And at the end of this work, an announcement is there. And this is the announcement which Obama says. And you have to look at this like a policy level as a policy level statement. So Obama is now saying how he wants to treat information security incidents in future, how he wants to organize his country. I think he's very clear. He's very eloquent. He's very knowledgeable about this. And this has happened, I think, around December 2010.
We meet today at a transformational moment, a moment in history when our interconnected world presents us at once with great promise, but also great peril. This world, cyberspace, is a world that we depend on every single day. It's our hardware and our software, our desktops and laptops and cell phones and BlackBerries that have become woven into every aspect of our lives. It's the broadband networks beneath us and the wireless signals around us, the local networks in our schools and hospitals and businesses, and the massive grids that power our nation. It's the classified military and intelligence networks that keep us safe, and the World Wide Web that has made us more interconnected than at any time in human history. We've had to learn a whole new vocabulary just to stay ahead of the cyber criminals who would do us harm. The spyware and malware and spoofing and phishing and botnets. Millions of Americans have been victimized, their privacy violated, their identities stolen, their lives upended, and their wallets emptied. Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups have spoken of their desire to unleash a cyber attack on our country, attacks that are harder to detect and harder to defend against. Indeed, in today's world, acts of terror could come not only from a few extremists in suicide vests, but from a few keystrokes on the computer, a weapon of mass disruption. No single official oversees cybersecurity policy across the federal government. No single agency has the responsibility or authority to match the scope and scale of the challenge. Indeed, when it comes to cybersecurity, federal agencies have overlapping missions and don't coordinate and communicate nearly as well as they should with each other or with the private sector. Today, I'm releasing a report on our review and can announce that my administration will pursue a new comprehensive approach to securing America's digital infrastructure. This new approach starts at the top with this commitment from me. From now on, our digital infrastructure, the networks and computers we depend on every day, will be treated as they should be, as a strategic national asset. Protecting this infrastructure will be a national security priority. We will ensure that these networks are secure, trustworthy, and resilient. I'm creating a new office here at the White House that will be led by the Cybersecurity Coordinator. Because of the critical importance of this work, I will personally select this official. I'll depend on this official in all matters relating to cybersecurity. And this official will have my full support and regular access to me as we confront these challenges. Let me also be clear about what we will not do. Our pursuit of cybersecurity will not include, I repeat, will not include monitoring private sector networks or internet traffic. We will preserve and protect the personal privacy and civil liberties that we cherish as Americans. Now our virtual world is going viral, and we've only just begun to explore the next generation of technologies that will transform our lives in ways we can't even begin to imagine. So a new world awaits, a world of greater security and greater potential prosperity, if we reach for it, if we lead. So long as I'm President of the United States, we will do just that. And the United States, the nation that invented the Internet, that launched an information revolution, that transformed the world, will do what we did in the 20th century and lead once more in the 21st. Thank you very much, everybody.
Yes. So this is commitment of the top. Perfect example. It's like in the textbook of the universities. Any aspect, he said, I am completely supporting those security guys. I resolve turf war. Turf war. Who knows what is turf war? Combating departments against each other. Who is responsible for what? So is it disaster or is it an incident? Is it business continuity or is it disaster recovery? Things like that. This is turf war. This word you read several times in the in the book. It's conflict about responsibilities. And he said turf war between the administrational entities, they combat each other, his words. This is turf war. And he said with one single powerful decision maker on cybersecurity, called cybersecurity coordinator, I want that this is better afterwards. And he gives regular contact to me, so don't think he's assigned and has no contact. I will support this guy regularly, and he has to report to me. So 100% clear, he has all the power, he can reorganize everything, and so on. This is commitment of the top, as it should be. You have seen it first time in the first week, in the movie where the CEO said, now we make information security to a priority. 20 years later, the same theater at a national level. And when you see how funding raises the research money for military issues in cybersecurity, it's really, really impressive. So this is the reaction on detecting that they are vulnerable. Does this work in Norway and Switzerland? You are vulnerable and you react not in the same way, because policy is a little bit different organized. It's more an equal culture that you have no superiors and no more such directive people as the American president, which can say, I want this, then it's like this. And think of the election, what will be when Trump gets the baton to the nuclear arms. I'm not 100% confident that I think it's a good idea. So a character which is not that much controlled. Of course, there are always some generals in between and so on, but it's really scary. Anyway, I think you understand now that in a more power distributed democracy like Norway or Switzerland, a decision like this needs much more time. And this is where our democracies are vulnerable. I mean, mine in Switzerland, yours here, and of course I feel also a little bit a part of Norway. But this is actually a finding, an aftermath of an incident which was reported. And suddenly it was clear we have to do something and we have to create funding for this. Impressive. I showed this movie in Brussels when I was the chair of the task force critical infrastructure of the European Union, and they were heavily impressed about how they could make it. Still with contractual public-private partnership, an idea of the European Commission to streamline security security tender towards European industry, that only European products, European security products are bought from European Union, which would mean to strengthen the European security industry. This gives probably 1.5 billion per year, and then some research money, the additional, like about 500 million, is roughly 2 billion per year, which European Commission spends on information security, IT security, cyber security. And they committed that they want to have an own industry, support this by research and support this by buying European security products. But Europe, unlike US, is not a a clear defense unit. Each member state has its own defense. And as long as defense is not coordinated centrally, the combat between secret services of the big, which are at first hand or were Germany, France, and Great Britain, but also Italy and Spain and Poland have over 40 million people, or around 40 million. So those together are like 60% of the European Union. Yeah, really impressive. Now, the next movie I want to show is a little bit how incident can happen.
We know the Pentagon's secret network was compromised. And we know how it was done, and we know who did it. The Russian Secret Service bought a bunch of thumb drives, you know, those little flash drives that you put in your USB part of your computer, and they scattered them around outside of Army bases, thinking that eventually someone in the U.S. Army would pick one up and use it on their home computer, and then take it from their home computer to a classified network, and then back again. And that happened. We don't know how many times it happened, but it happened enough that it allowed the Russians to penetrate the Pentagon's secret level network. So when you leave here tonight and you see those flash drives in the parking lot, might want to leave them on the ground.
This is Richard Clark. Richard Clark was a cybersecurity coordinator, so advising the president in this matter for a long term, and wrote the book Cybersecurity, Cyber War, and he was honored in a university for his work, and this was the presentation he gave when he received the prize, and it was on YouTube, and I was just it's all over 1.5 hours, and I took a couple passages out to share with the students. And he shows just an incident, how it happened, how it's communicated to the public. So they were obviously ready after it happened. And this is good. Let's go to the next movie and the last movie I prepared for you.
That's why we have a cyber command. It is also why 25 other nations now have cyber commands. So that in the future, if they want to attack us, they can do it in cyberspace. The Iranians don't have missiles that will reach here. But they do have bits and bytes that can reach here. Crazy regimes like North Korea could never attack the United States before. But they do, even the North Koreans, have cyber attack capability. So in the future, terrorist groups or nation states can use cyber weapons to attack. And they can use cyber weapons to make it easier for their regular weapons to attack. In the opening pages of the book Cyber War, I describe an incident in which Israel decided to blow up a nuclear plant in Syria. Syria was secretly building nuclear weapons, and the Israelis decided to blow up the plant. The only problem was that Syria had tremendous air defense, radars and missiles, and the Israelis wondered how many airplanes they would lose flying into Syria to bomb this plant. Well, when the Israelis flew into Syria to bomb the plant, the Syrians, as they are all the time, were at the radar looking at the radar screens, and the radar screens were showing no airplanes. No airplanes in the sky. Sky is clear. If the Syrians had only opened the windows, they could have heard the Israeli F-15s flying overhead on the way to bomb the power plant. But through a cyber attack, the Israelis were able to turn off the Syrian air defense. That's cyber war.
Any question? Of course, such a successful mission is to share. Why? They want that the world knows what they have for capabilities. So, if you attack us, be careful, we might hit back. This is the basic message here. I had other videos I would like to share with you, but I didn't find them. I have them on hard drives, and somehow I missed one hard drive, which were most movie out. There are a lot of different things. Like one was when Kevin Mitnick was arrested. Then the police was at the door and asked whether Kevin Mitnick is at home. And then he plays and says, excuse me, sir, I have to check. I wanted to close the door. But they recognized him and took him anyway. But it was so fantastic how he tried to social engineer those guys and tried to find a way out of the situation. He even managed. So in this time, they were clever enough, and finally he was arrested. And he sat in jail. He's a 2-day security advisor again. And this is something which I had a hard time to understand, that in the U.S., criminals working for national government on secret level is no problem. I don't think in Switzerland we could engage a criminal for government purposes. What do you think about Norway? Is no more trustworthy. But they have means, economical means, to tie him so much into this that they feel secure disengaging them and using them, and that they have a lot to lose and don't make any misuse again. So they are trusting people that they can change. Of course, they are surveilled as well. I mean, this is the duty of the employer, but this is a little bit different. I don't think when you come out of jail that you are engaged in the service in Switzerland, and probably here the same in U.S. You see often that they collaborate with crooks, and they understand those guys and give them an opportunity to have a normal life again if they cooperate. And there are many cases reported like this. Yeah, so this was a couple videos. Are you ready to come back to normal, lecture? Let me see, I think I have to regulate a little bit the loudspeaker. Because I think I have to cease the sound. I hope this is now no more too loud, and then email is coming. that I didn't need. Cease and sound that I didn't need the Skype if they, the students are lecture. I have prepared a couple things extra, so in the next few, in the next hour you will have for sure also some relaxation in between. That we can manage our focus on the topic. Incidents, response, action. What are the actions associated with incident response? Basically, these are three actions. Detection, recognition that an incident is underway. And this is utmost important after we have had the Snowden revelation that every IT system is insecure. So you cannot protect and forget. You have to protect, detect, and reaction. And reaction is now in two separate issues. Reaction responding to the incident in a predetermined. This is like the plan. Fashion to contain and mitigate its potential damage. Contain, isolate, mitigate, lower impact. Recovery, returning all system and data to their state before the incident. This is the primary goal. And as you know, BC and BRT are the same. Here is a checklist. Let us take like an issue or two to explain. Report the incidents to the appropriate internal personnel and external organization. Containment, eradication, and recovery. So what you did and how you proceeded in strategy to isolate the incident. And remove malware, inappropriate materials, and other components. This is eradicate part. So you have these lists, and I don't think that the lists are to learn by heart, but it's about to understand the list and know for which issue those lists are, that you can look them up in case of need. Then data protection in preparation for incidents. Data protection, let's look here, here it's probably not named the data protection like privacy issue, more in general to protect your data. Additional backups, the organization can use a combination on-site, off-site, tape drive, or hard drive backup methods in a variety of rotation schemes. Usually daily backup, incremental, weekly, full backup for the smaller installation, monthly backup for the last 5 years or something like that. And the weeklies are rotating every week. This is a typical cycle. Electronic vaulting, the organization can employ bulk data transfer to data to an off-site facility. Transfer is usually conducted via lease lines or secure internet connection, which is VPN. This is only for little data possible. I tried to make my small micro enterprise infrastructure to back up to another site via VPN. Finally, we had to stop this because it was using all bandwidth and was never really finished. remote journaling, that you have transaction inside and offside synchronized, then databases are supporting those type of things. And data by shadowing, storing duplicate online transaction data along with duplicate databases, that's the remote side and the redundant server. So you have all simultaneous at both sides, so that you have one switch to turn over to the other side. Here I tried to book a slide which sponsored Professor Rachman. I took it from him and adopted it a little bit. It was a long story behind, but it shows a little bit how we do this. Here you see the normal operation, and here is normal operation again. Then you have the incident, and the impact on a resilient incident is somewhat smaller than on a non-resilient. It's a theoretical, not really truthful graph, but it makes you more to understand. Then you have here the recovery time up to normal, and whether you have the procedure in place and you can react on procedures, this incident response plan, business continuity management plan, or you don't have this in place. It's the slope of this is different. And you see two times a little bit less steep and a little bit less steep makes like half the time. And imagine you lose your server at home. Then you go first for an evaluation what you want to buy again. Then you have probably somewhere a backup, probably you have it only on you think you have to on your laptops or a small disk. Then you have to replace this physically and install it. Days are gone until it's working again. When you have a predefined procedure, you'll have it within hours. So the difference is not really given. It's probably much more. And then this is too much, sorry. I make it different. Again, projection. Here you see the preparedness of the Department of Defense. Defense analysis, remediation, indication and warning. This is the incident itself, the event. Then mitigation, response, reconstruction. A six-step. So there are many organizations making something alive. And when we had this task force about critical infrastructure, we had policy recommendations, and look what we had. Increased policy and operational focus on resilience and preparedness. So away from protect only, the need to protect critical infrastructures, including critical information infrastructure, must be fully understood by policymakers. How to make this, as the awareness of these policies leads to a paradigm shift in the way we think about infrastructure policy making. And then the key question on resilience and preparedness, what we expect, what is the need, what we can afford, what is are the dependencies, the interdependencies, what is the political support, minimum level of the EU. These are questions. And these are policy questions. You have to answer those questions when you are dealing with these issues. So policy seems to be very easy, but without answering this question, you cannot make a new policy. There is, for instance, a question when you build a bridge in Norway and a bridge in Bulgaria, do you build this in the same secure way? Actually, it should be so. It should have minimum standards, but from the level what we can afford, it's very different. And the question is now how much you mutually support. So this is not theoretical, this is very much real. Political support, minimum level of fear, minimum standards, any country has to do this, not depending on the rights. And which diversity is accepted in each between emerging and wealthy member states? I would consider Romania and Bulgaria as emerging member states. The doping incident, the challenge is determining whether an event, routine system use, or an action or incident. So this is like the turf war. Is it an incident? Is it a heavy incident or not? Incident classification is the process of examining an adverse event or incident candidate and determining whether it constitutes an actual incident. So, and the severeness of the incident. Then initial reports from end user intrusion detection system host, a network-based virus detection software and system optimization are all ways to track and detect incident candidates. So you have an observation, now it's an incident candidate. And then how to classify this. Careful training allows everyone to rely on vital information to the incident response team. And now we have like three types of incident indicators, possible indicators. The next list is probable indicators and definite indicators. So these are real ones. And we look into the list. Possible means it could be, but it could not be. Presence on unfamiliar files, presence or execution of unknown program or processes, unusual consumption of computing resources. So you see that the load when you go in Task Manager is going up. But probably it's an update running or downloading or something like that. Must not be unusual system crashes. Then another one, probable. So it's more rather likely that it's not secure. Activities at unexpected times. Out of office hours, for instance. Presence of new accounts. There are accounts created which you didn't have created. Therefore, I explained to you that one bank is regenerating every day the account database. Reported attacks and notification from IDS. Can be, is likely, but not sure. And then, when it's real indicated, use of dormant account, change to locks, if this is feasible. Many companies have also locks stored in an unchangeable way. So you know that you have the locks on your hard drive, this is one option. But there is also the read once, write once, read many, ROMs, and this type of technology is used usually to create locks. But you can only write once a second, but you cannot override it. In presence of hacker tools, notification by partner or peers, notification by hacker. Notification by partner or peers, for instance, our big gate case of the procurement agency of the army, which was hacked, was a hint of a foreign secret service that there is something odd. Probably because they detected in their network that there were activities related to this enterprise in terms of drop zones or zombies or things like that. Then when something happened, how you classified CIA, confidentiality, integrity, availability kind of laws, violation of policy, violation of law. These are like the five main categories. Then reaction to incidents, discussion question to change a little bit energy. Which action might be taken from incident personnel? Who authorized the action and what is the timeline? So, if an action is not thought of before, I think the incident response team has a hard time to take the action. If the consequences of an action are not clarified before, I don't think it's wise to make to use this action, or you must be very sure. And then authorizes the action only if you have a template which is approved that you are allowed, and then you have just to justify whether the situational indicators, the severeness of the incident, and the associated potential risk is given to the level on which you can self-decide and authorize the action. And then timeline is critical. You have no time to rediscuss everything with everybody. You just have to go. So once an actual incident has been confirmed and properly classified, the incident response plan moves from the detection phase to the reaction phase. Very simple, I think you understand this good. In the incident response phase, a number of action steps taken by CSERT and others must occur quickly and may occur concurrently, so several at the same time. And these steps include notification of key personnel, assignment of tasks, and documentation of the incident. Real case now. Again, something I share with you. Reaction option on e-banking fraud. It's now 7, 8 years ago. It's still very visible to tell this case. You have secure communication, but the end device remains insecure. So you have here the cloud. You have a secure communication between two systems. But even when those are communicating secure, the system itself can download from the internet and get some malware. You have an attachment and you can open the attachment that this was infected. So you are never secure. When you want to have a really secure communication, then you must have an infection. This is how drive-by download and attachments are working. You see the secure channel, 100% secure. But our students, when I was at Kopen University teaching, were not stupid, and you see that a system, a secure system with escape option can be used, and the traces, which are not really meant to be so, but mid-November we have seen this, and then he made this picture dark, good shot, and a friend of mine, we were doing this picture for 5, 6 years together. And Is it here again? Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm. Let me know. Hello? Students, I think it should be okay. I presume that it's fixed now. Otherwise, you tell me. Okay, so what we had here is this parallel attack that somebody played banking server and was just using the interface that they show, they give that you release the credential. What you can do against this, I tell you later. But let's go forward towards this and look what is the business case and what were the quantified options. The first, to defend this technology is short-term very difficult. So you have a long-term perspective and you use this long-term perspective. Phase one is successful hookup to attack a stop zone to allow precise monitoring of their activities, the action time reduced from hours to minutes. So when you are in drop zone of the hackers, then you can see what data they get and you can follow them. Phase two, intelligent countermeasures against the drop zone to get access to the attackers' credentials. Online real-time detection of any successful compromised client based on client's contact number. So when you see this is an account which is compromised, you have the contact number. And phase C, the most recent success gives a few minutes to lead time to block the contract before the account is actually attacked and any money is stolen transferred from the account. So he has only one single login, the next login will be different. When they lock them out, it would be good. But what they did, they let them perform the action that they could observe them, and then they blocked the payment. So the hacker was successful in many steps, but finally he didn't manage to get money. Counterfeit such scenarios, they are following approaches. Whenever the attackers were successful, they are several options. Denial of money transfer is explained. So you destroy the business model. He was working, and when he should get the money for his work, there is nothing. Then repression through exchange of criminal money transfer information and demand as a country from political side, criminal prosecution, justice and cooperation. The pressure to e-crime will be much higher. We are fighting for that. So when you go to these countries, and usually the hackers are smart, then they are operating from a country which they can act without being prosecuted. So this doesn't work. Even so, within Europe and Communion, the EU Cybercrime Convention works at the moment and it's spreading out. And counter-regulation through attacking the criminal server works out, but it's not really beneficial. The background is when you attack them and you destroy their server or shut them down, they know that you can observe them. They change the site, they are in a new place, they start work again, and until you are in the drop zone and know everything about them again, there is months going by. So this is why the counter reaction, the counter hack doesn't work. And the 1A, the 2A, more denial of money transfer, doesn't work really well when you do it always. So what they said, they would have been preferred not blocking any transfer, allowing one transfer time by time, that the hacker do not understand what happens. Lesson learned, botnets cannot be efficiently stopped at this point in time, and midterm, the PC remains inherently insecure, whatever accurate virus protection might be installed, and only a minority of servers could have been shut down with the support of the ISP and law enforcement, so criminals outside Europe are still quite secure, and for certain jurisdiction it seems impossible to get the hackers arrested, even though their identity might be revealed. So you know the hacker, you know the name, you know the place he lives, you know when he starts work, you know when he has vacation, you know when he goes to the washroom, you know when he has a break, when he's eating lunch, everything you know, but you cannot make anything. And strong authentication is users is not strong enough to prevent highly sophisticated. Then challenges to banks face. A policymaker cooperation on law enforcement the sensitivity for this needs to be raised. Even so, it's critical to tell this. At individual bank, money transfer to inappropriate beneficiaries have to be stopped by technical means. So you go now one step further. You are locked in as a hacker, but you cannot act. You stop them from acting because they need an account verification. And banking organizations should create awareness on an international scale. And banks should build up a non-competitive channel to efficiently manage incident against e-services. So I think this is a very practical thing to see how collaboration works. I'll tell you now what they did. So at this point in time, he was locked in. But what they did is using 6 digits for validation for the account that you can make a login, and the 5-digit code to whitelist a potential beneficiary. So when he is in, he can pay to all my whitelisted clients, but he cannot pay to his account, so it's useless. What they tried to do, and this is very interesting, they tried to give at start for the challenge here a 5-digit number that they have like a couple predefined whitelisted credentials. But the bank communicated them, be careful. 6 character is login, 5 character is beneficiary sign up, whitelisting from the beneficiary. And I think it works pretty well. But you see how tricky it is and how many ways around they find, and how this real combat between hackers and banks is going on. Notification of key personnel. As soon as an incident is declared, the right people must be immediately notified in the right order.
Now I think it's okay again. Please tell me if it's gone again, then I go and pick up a new thing. Yeah, what they were telling me. Thanks a lot for reporting so well. If it's gone away, tell me again, then we will go and proceed. Okay, notification of key personnel, we were discussing this. An alert rooster is just a list. Rooster is a list where you can inform who you have to inform in which sequential order. The alert message is scripted, a description of the incident. And other key personnel must also be notified of the incident only after the incident has been confirmed, but before media or external sources learn of it. So, very important, the circle is trusted. Nobody else should get the message. Otherwise, you fight against the media and against the attack. And then in the book it said also that it's not a good idea to have an automatic list. It's better to call them up, that you know also when you need alternate options, and that you know how you organize people and who is available. Documenting an incident, it's confirmed the incident, then should be recorded who, what, when, where, why, and how of each action taken in incidents when reoccurring. It serves as a case study after the de facto, after the facts to determine if the right actions were taken and whether they were effective, and it can also prove the organization did everything possible to deter the spread out of the incident. So it's also for legal protection of the incident response team. And you know, it's quite a lot of responsibility. Sometimes it deals with really a lot of money. Then containment strategy, the essential is the task of incidents is to stop the incident or to contain its impact. I explained this with the Swiss frame before, that when you have the wrong strategy, you can make even the mess bigger than it would be just to turn off one specific component. Incident containment strategies focus on two tasks, stopping the incidents, recovering control of the system. So when you lose control of the system, probably you want as soon as possible control of the system, and you have to estimate whether it's wise to shut the system down. For instance, when you have like several defense lines against attacker, and your authorization system doesn't work at the moment. You can also decide to switch off authorization for an hour if nobody knows. The damage is probably pretty little against to stopping everybody from work. You have trade-offs. How many people could realize that certain authorization is not working at the moment, and what benefit they can take out of it. So risk-wise, it's probably a wise decision to leave the system open for a while, then shut the system down and create a lot of damages. Containment strategies, disabling compromised user accounts, reconfiguring a firewall to block the problem traffic, temporarily disable the compromised processes or service, taking down the concrete application or server, for example, an email server, or stopping all computers and network devices, which is probably the least preferable option. Then incident escalation. When you escalate incident, and they are really severe, there is a lot of attention of top management. suddenly you don't talk to your manager, you don't talk to the to the second, third line manager, you talk suddenly to the CEO of the company or to the minister of a specific department. This gives a lot of recognition. The question is this good and how long you should maintain this? Usually this top level buy-in, you should keep as short as possible, because they don't like to be engaged for a long while on this. They need probably after action a couple synchronization campaign again, but to try to overstretch the demand after this is not good. An NCS or so, remember, it's not really the new reality when you get this attention. It's just a turnaround for a very limited period, and then you are the same little employee working in a team as you were before. An incident may increase in scope or severity at the point that the incident's response plan cannot adequately contain the incident, then it needs to be escalated. Each organization will have to determine during the business impact analysis the point at which the incident becomes a disaster. So then with disaster means automatically business continuity management, but the disaster could also be when it's leaked to Wikipedia or not WikiLeaks, or when it is revealed to press. The organization must also document when to involve outside response, like escalating it to other certs, national cert, government cert, international organizations, and so on. Recovering from incidents, I want to give you some extra comment. Here in the book, page 425, I think it's rather perfect text, and I think you profit when you know why this is a perfect project. Perfect text. So when you have, I'm not sure whether I have the right list. Handling incidents, recovering from incidents, I think I'm on the wrong list. Has anybody found this? Or is it right here? So what I observed in the text, but I'm not sure that I took the right text, that you have in the first sentence always what is the paragraph about. Like restore the data from backup, and then it's explained. Restore the services and processes in use, and then you explain. So that you have, like, when you read the first part of the sentence, you already know about it, what it is, and you know actually everything, and you can recall the whole rest. There are also in consultancy some texts that you have, each paragraph is a little bit shifted to the right, and on the left you have the topic of the paragraph, so that you, when you want to read fast and just be well informed, that you can have to read just the first sentence. The last point is to restore the confidence of the members of the organization's communities of interest. So when you might lose in recovering from incident, you might lose the confidence and trust of your management and other parties in the organization, then you can restore this. Well, must assess the full extent of damage in order to determine what must be done to restore the systems. Then immediate determination of scope of the breach of confidentiality, degradability of information and information is called incident damage assessment. So
political aspects. A minor incident can be easily shared. A big incident is difficult to be shared. And as soon as it's of public interest, it's very much a point of time you are going now. So what it means in our armed forces procurement agency, the case was kept under cover for probably 4 months before one parliament member in the commission said, this is of so much relevance, public has to know. And he announced that he will go to the media because of his integrity. He could do this. And he argued, and actually the defense ministry was not very happy, but then it was in the newspaper. Yeah, you know, but 4 months was a long time. So it was not, and it was not unannounced. They announced that the parliament member in the... So the case was that our procurement agency of the army was hacked. It's not clear where, but there are some indications that the demo software, which was used from the Russian in other cases. And then when you look at this, the parliament members and the army, there is in the parliament is a commission of security people, and then they were collaborated, and somewhere the commission said it's of so much relevance we have to go public 4 months later after the meeting. And yeah, you know, it's a No, I think at this time this was no more critical, but it's about the impact of such an incident. And then it was in the media, and interviews were coming up, and I was even asked to give an interview in the main news of Swiss TV on this. And the statement was clear, we don't do sufficient for the protection of our data. This is a real case, and when a politician of the security board, and this is like, when you see the defense minister is controlled by parliament, and not the whole, there is defense or security commission, which controls the defense, and if this commission decides to go public, then it's public. Because it's of relevance, and they make for sure some risk assessment. But anyway, I think we have to continue, and I will give you the screen free.
I double check whether it's working with the microphone, and I think it's good. Thank you for telling me. I hope I got the point in time. It was off. So we were about preserve evidence. What does it mean? I was telling about how in small enterprises the whole IT is taken out and not replaced. And today, if you have very critical tasks, usually they provide you special equipment that they confiscate only this equipment, and they do not destroy the life of the supplier of secret contracts. So recovering from incident includes formulated rather defensively, identify the vulnerability and stop spread out, resolve routing, address the safeguards that failed to stop the, or limit the incidents or were missing in the system in the first place, and install and replace and upgrade them. So when safeguards have failed, like a new malware, then look that the malware is in future recognized, and evaluate monitoring capabilities if present to improve detection and reporting methods, or install new monitoring capabilities. So you see the other side. One is to protect against similar cases, and the other is to improve monitoring capabilities, because the detect is really a strong issue. Then typical things like restore data from backup, restore services and clean them up and restore them, and proceed with continuous monitoring. Restore the confidence of the members of the organization, community of interest. This is like typical. There is in McAfee, they have 10 common mistakes that an organization sees that make in incident response. 10 common mistakes. Let us look a little bit in this. So what is usually that an organization doesn't do well? Appoint a clear chain of command with a specific individual in charge. Chain of command is you report to them, you report to them, and the one on the top is direct in everything. And the chain of command should be very specific, and it should be only one on the top in charge. Not, as Obama said, I had several agents in dealing with this and combating each other. At an incident, there is no time to make a combat, so make one single individual. Even if the decision is wrong, it's better to have a decision than no decision. Establish a central operation center. Know your enemy. Very important. Well, what is the counterpart? RSA, you know RSA. RSA key and the random number generator and all this. This organization was attacked. The chief technology officer gave in Switzerland a presentation. He lives also in Switzerland. What happened? RSA was attacked, but not to go into RSA. So know your enemy. They had an enemy profile, and they were profiling and thinking these are the cases which would happen. What happened? An Excel list where they made new recruitment was sent to a recruitment office and came back. When coming back, it was intercepted by a hacker, added malware, and was sent with the right source address to the organization. So why not to open such an Excel? They were in. But they didn't intend to go to RSA. They wanted a trusted channel to their customer, that they can attack the large-scale customer, big companies. And this is why they did it. And for this, RSA was not prepared. They thought of attacking this company, but they were just using to go forward. So this was a case where knowing your enemy was exactly leading in the wrong direction. Develop a comprehensive incident response plan. These containment strategies, containment is very, very important. Don't forget to know how to make containment, and how, when it's time to shut down a container. we declined to contain. We called incident response activities at all phases, help desk to detect incidents, etc. Document events as they occur in a timeline. You know, I work a long time with students, and my experience is that students start reading and not making note of references, and then they start programming if they have a task, and at the very end they start documenting. You never catch up what you need to document, especially in incidents. And you never have time nor inner force to document it when you do it not online. Distinguish incident containment from incident remediation. So one is to limit the spread out, and the other is to remediate it, to recreate original status, secure and monitor networks and network devices, and establish and manage the system and network logging. So the logging systems were like 10 years ago very poor. Today, state of the art is security incident and event monitoring, CM, where you consolidate of all system you have, all logs in a central place, and analyzes whether they are into the system, some activities that you can conclude there is an attack. CM is very typical. ArcSight, for instance, has a product which does this already 15 years running, but today it's like state of the art that you make a security information evaluation and monitoring. Establish and manage system network logging, and establish and support effective antivirus and anti-malware solution. Establish, many install this, effective and antivirus and anti-malware solutions. This is what we can do, more we can't do. Except you are a very rich organization. Then this recommendation for the handling of incident. Incidents, when they come, they need also logistics. I think many of us served in army, and you know, each incident has a complex logistic behind, and tools supporting you in this logistics are very welcome. So then you invest into prevention. Then you identify precursors and indicators through alerts generated by several types of security software. So that is in the detect phase, that you have not one system, that you have many systems, to observe whether everything is okay. Establish mechanism from outside parties to report incident. This is nothing else than information sharing in a circle of thirds, in a circle of in the circle of first and other organizations, government circle, national circles, and so on. Require a baseline level of logging and auditing on all systems, and a higher baseline level on all critical systems. So general system have general monitoring and detection. Critical system have specialized level. Profile network and systems. Profiling network and system means also something that you know what is a healthy system. And there is there are some products which create like an application footprint per application, they record the normal behavior. So when you have abnormal behavior, first you can be warned. And second, when you do this in sufficient detail, you can detail out whether it's the server, whether it's the network, whether it's the client, whether it's a router and so on, because you have all measurements of the application footprint, that you know exactly where something fails. This is not especially against attack, but it's against network failure. Understand the normal behavior of network system and application. This is what I said, this application footprinting application based, and create a log retention policy, so how long you save those, and perform event correlation. Security information and event management. Create a log retention policy. In our case of RUAG, procurement agency, the incident happened more than 1 year ago, and they had a policy for 1 year retention, so they could not recreate the situation at this time because the logs were no more available. Yeah, then recommendation for incident handling, keep all host clocks synchronized. This is everybody who knows a little bit about time sync. This is really very hard to have all systems well synchronized. Then use a maintain knowledge database. Start recording all information as soon as team suspects that an incident has occurred. Safeguard incident data, and so on. Let's see whether there is a point which is established strategies and procedure for containing incidents. I think this is very important that there more than one strategy is for containment. Established procedure for evidence gathering. I think this is also very important. Yeah, I think we were pretty much through this list and come to the next point, organizational philosophy on incident and disaster handling. There are two basic philosophies. One is patch and proceed. So what you do when you have a virus warning, you contain this and you work forward. Pursue and prosecute is the less preferred option for many. It takes time, it's awful, it's really something which is from academic side and from prosecution side very much wanted, but even in the case patch and proceed, even basic reporting is usually not done to authorities or so on, but you have an enormous amount of not reported and unclear situations. When the estimates were done on 1.6% of the gross product of Germany, which is 52 billion euros, then this is not on 100% secured figures, but it's the best estimate and it's a low estimate. It's not the high estimate, it's a low estimate. So something which should be really credible. This is because patch and proceed without reporting is like the normal case. Or even what the Norwegian director said, the Norwegian strategy is conscious ignorance. So with full consciousness, you say it's not an issue because you are afraid of action you have to take. Disaster recovery. Again, we can go back to the very basics. What is is disaster. When you have a disaster is when you cannot use your primary environment anymore. You have to switch to a second side, and then you have to recreate and remediate original environment to go to a recovery process. And no matter whether it's natural or man-made. What is a hint that you have a disaster? The organization is unable to contain or control the impact of an incident. Don't know how to do it. The level of damage or destruction from an incident is so severe the organization is unable to quickly recover. And the key role of disaster recovery planning is defining how to establish operation at the location where the organization is usually located, primary site. So the incident response has the goal to contain the incident and to proceed in little incidents, in bigger incidents, the disaster recovery is taking over. Organizational-wise, just to let me clarify, the steps are very similar. But are the same people involved in business, in incident response and in disaster recovery? What do you think? Does it make sense to have the same people engaged because they are knowledgeable? What is pro and cons? Yeah, this is a good question. This is what we discussed early morning, exactly the right answer. But you know, we have to repeat this a little bit to understand. Incident response, business continuity, and disaster recovery is running at the same time. Three teams, all active. So you need how many teams? Three teams, or how many teams you need when you have a large organization? Yeah, this is good, but actually, when you have a case, the most important is call them, take them in a room, and then you take the fork in the middle way, half of them go to sleep and the others are active. Because otherwise you run out of steam after 8 or 10 hours. So with two teams, 24 hours, it's roughly tough. Better have three teams per topic to run. And this during vacation time or on Christmas. So it's really tough to get this equipped. And also the contract is the supplier side. When supplier issues are witnessed, you should have also three teams. So at the moment the crash is really there, then it's high life. And it's everybody who can contribute and is in the area, stops vacation, comes back. Then, of course, the strategy again is the option you have, make salvage, purchase, otherwise acquire replacement, or you have a switch up to the secondary side. This is possible. This is a personal thing to give you some insights in the thinking of crisis management. March 22, 11 o'clock. You know what was March 22? Brussels Airport, terrorist attack, explosion. Malbec, this is a crossing junction, and here would be the entry point to the metro. And this is Malbec. You see military present, you see here this heavy weapon, you see TV present, just making pictures. A good hour after it crashes. And on this side of the crossing where I'm standing here, in the first floor we had our conference. The Europe Network Security Conference of ENISA industry high-level meeting. Then what they do, they make containment. What means containment? You cannot leave the hotel. You cannot leave the neighborhood, you cannot leave town, and you cannot leave the county. 11 o'clock. We were so much pissed off, two friends of mine, we decided to go. First, how to leave the hotel? Don't ask the reception. My friend went to the director and said, said, to go this direction you can leave. And then, no, there is a soldier in front of the door. Then he went back to the director. He said, no, dear secretary, this is the balcony in your office, this is the only door which is not guarded. So we went through the balcony out. Then the neighborhood containment, they didn't even react on three men in suits and with hand luggage. So we went out and then we tried to take a taxi to the South Station where we had a car rental, but the South Station was already evacuated of potential other damage. So they avoid spread out. So we had to make new plans, and then one of our friends said, okay, I invest 200 euros to go to Aachen, which is about two hours away from, 2 car hours from Brussels. And the first one wanted 400, and here then he found an already occupied taxi with a lady, and we three could make pity pack. And travel is short. Shortly before we came along the nuclear power plant, we heard that this nuclear power plant was evacuated. One of my friends was very scared, very scared. He said, do you believe a nuclear power plant is evacuated without reasons? This cannot be. He was a high-ranking officer, and then he was logging in into the NATO system. He was logging in the nuclear waste map, and he was calling up, and all three indicators showed nothing. So we decided we crossed like 5 kilometers from the station, and a little bit later I got from a report, and this is like a real situational report. Belgian security services are fearful of that ISIS operatives may have been looking to target the nuclear plant. Two workers from a plant in Doel fled to Syria to join ISIS. One of them died. The other one was alive. with an extensive understanding of nuclear facilities he left. And you have to know there are SCADA systems at place, they have hard-coded passwords in the hardware. No change. And the guy who is there knows those passwords. ISIS plot to attack the facility and release radioactive waste into the atmosphere. Terrorists want to sabotage a critical piece of machinery and cause the plant to melt down. Nuclear power plants are known to be targets for networks. All non-essential staff of Doran and Tianj power plants have been sent home. And then what was said, foreseeable future Belgian nuclear power plants will continue operating with staff level severe to weaken services to ensure that no unarrested personnel is there, better safe than sorry, is the motto. What was the philosophy behind? They have pre-identified, they obviously made a good job in the risk of this nuclear power plant and selected a team which is especially trustworthy and will not collaborate with anybody. You cannot have a full workforce controlled in this way, but some. And then a major instructor said, I would not be surprised if there was an attempt in the next 5 years to use the internet to commit an attack. It would take the form of entering the SCADA, which is the nerve center of a nuclear power plant. Interesting. This is a disaster and a disaster recovery plan. They did the job. Whether they saved something or it's just better safe than sorry, we don't know. But this was my experience. Disaster management, communication, response team, what they do, management, communication, recovery of computer system network storage application, data management, then vendor contracting, and vendor contracting means also that you have plans, what you reorder if you don't have a second site. And if you have a second side and first side is destroyed, then you reorder anyway. Damage assessment and salvage, business interface, logistics, and others needed. And then, of course, again, there are several frameworks. Everything is very logic when you have time, what to do. Organize the DR team, develop DR planning policy statement, review BIA, identify preventive controls, point and to create DR strategy, develop the plan and document, ensure testing and maintenance. Are those any different from the other one of incident response? Almost not. It's basically the same, and this is also an important finding. Even they have different tasks, it's basically on the management side, on the high-level planning side, the same. And then about the policy, I think I don't go through the policy, because it's pretty much the same, you can read this. A DR plan can classify disaster in a number of ways. Natural disaster, man-made disaster. And rapid onset disaster, slow onset disaster. And this is also very important to know. There are disasters happening very rapidly. With no notice, and there are long notice. And it's more difficult to have a good set of answers on slow or on a rapid one. And long term, usually there are signs coming and you can react accordingly, step by step, like with the new situation of Russia, this acquisition of Crimea and the activity in Syria, many governments in Central Europe started to increase their military budget after years of cutting every year the military budget. So this is a slow onset disaster planning, which just comes from risk zero to a relevant risk again. There is no sign that there is actually a strong need, but it's precaution. Then the number of natural disasters. I think you know everything of this. Electrostatic discharge, ESD, is probably on the natural side not so well known, but lightning could harm some equipment. Then planning to recover. Key points in the disaster recovery plan are again probably pretty much the same as we had before. Clear delegation of roles and responsibilities. Again, this is very, very important to have a single command, chain command, and that you have of each one you clearly set what you do. Clear establishment of priorities. The priorities are pre-established. If you start a debate, you are lost because you cannot hold the timeline. So a simple plan, disaster recovery plan elements, the name of agency, date and completion, with staff to be called, emergency service to be called, location of in-house emergency equipment and supplies, source of off-site equipment and supplies, salvage priority list, agency disaster recovery procedure, follow-up assessment. Tell me, when fire starts where you live, you have five items to take away. Mainly three you take away. You have to leave suddenly. No. No. Mm-hmm. Earlier on it was like the picture book, the photo books, because they are non-replaceable. All the rest might be injured and you can get again. We're on site, yeah? What? Yeah, okay. But I think this is pretty much what you do. Or like the children, the essential which you can travel on. That's it. This is the priority list. And astonishing is how priority shifts. You realize how much you care for this during normal life, and suddenly everything which seems to be so valuable is of no relevance. We go to the third of the operational pillar. We had incident response. Incident response is immediate associated visual incidents. It makes the full job on little incidents. On large incidents, disaster recovery is called to recreate the first side, and business continuity is to continue business on another side or in the same side with different means. We PCP ensures critical business function can continue in a disaster and is most likely managed by the CEO or COO of the organization. Probably more COO than CEO, because CEO has to be free to react on whatever is coming. I wouldn't take the responsibility as CEO for this. I would like to make the CEO, he is for the media communication as additional workforce, knowledgeable and so on, and not to take charge. PCP is activated and it's concurrently with the DRP plan, so concurrently means two teams, both in action. Then here, business continuity methodology can also adapt to BC, form the BCT, develop planning, review BIA, and so on. You see, again, the full 8 points. I don't annoy you with the same list. And the policy is also pretty much similar, I think, with nearly no difference. Again, exercise and testing and plan and maintenance. These are the points often forgotten. But any plan not trained is no plan. Any plan not trained is no plan. I think this is a very important. Then continuity strategies, there are three exclusive use options, hot side, warm side, cold side. Warm side is the platform which is already running. You can have, like in Amazon Cloud systems, you have a site but the software is not loaded. Then you have to load the data and the software. And cold side is you press the button and it starts. Three shared use options, timeshare, service period and mutual agreement. To use them as money-saving options, service bureaus, you can share those with others, hoping that not all shared one has the same problem. Like in Switzerland, there are, I think, three major enterprises sharing one big IBM host environment second side. Hoping not all three of them are out. Specialized option, rolling mobile site, externally stored position the resources. Rolling mobile site, I want to tell you something I heard from the German crisis management. Did you hear from Elbe flood? Some years ago, Elbe was, river was heavy going up, over height, and flooded a lot of the environment. And many towns were completely flooded, and telecommunication has to be restored. And Germany Telecom has around 100 telecom lorries. And from these 100, 10 were used to make the crisis, to re-establish the communication. So they have microwave links, satellite communication, and can switch 100,000 telephones and so on. So it was quite easy to reinstall everything after the main equipment was done with 10% of the capacity. This is a rolling mobile site. And they were even supporting Poland and Czechia, where the river was in this area. So you have a denial of service attack. There's a distributed denial of service attack. Occurs concurrently from a lot of zombies. This could create a disaster. This is a disaster recovery plan. Hopefully, this DDoS attack are not that difficult anymore. The telecom provider have quite good answers to filter against services and so on to remediate this, but it's quite costly. Like protection is around 500,000 kroner a year or something like that. Disaster recovery and business continuity planning. Here are the staff members' ERP. Here is the business continuity option and alternate safe. This is the first organization disaster that occurs here on the primary side. And the operation is then taking over to the alternate side, and business continuity has to make that this is running well. On the primary side, there is the disaster team looking for. And here you have the timeline, I think, yeah, implementation timeline. You have the incidents response team, this is first. Then detect after some while, it is a disaster, calls the after reaction. This calls the off-site operations. Business continuity starts, and then for a while are the three units working concurrently. I think this is very storytelling, this slide. There are no more that many slides. Let me know, yeah, I think we can complete this. So, crisis management. Another process that many organizations plan for separately is crisis management. Which focuses more on the effects of a disaster has on people than its effect on information assets. So people, and what is the role of people? If people die, they cannot be in the planning teams or in the incident response team, disaster recovery plan, and business continuity plan. So this is one thing. The other thing is that also for running the business you need critical person with critical knowledge, with critical capabilities, and it's not easy to replace them. When you want to have the company alive, so it's a very important thing to have the crisis aspect, the people aspect also. And according to Gartner research, the crisis management team is responsible for managing the event from an enterprise perspective and performs the following roles. Supporting personnel and their loved ones during the crisis. So this is directed to persons. Then you have to go to the loved ones and inform them what happened and so on, when injuries are even when they passed. Keeping the public informed about the event and the action being taken to ensure the recovery of personnel and enterprise. Communication with major customers, suppliers, partners, regulatory agencies, industry organizations, the media, and other interested parties. Now, question is, can you gain from a crisis? Is it a losing only? Yeah. I can share with you two incidents. One was 2001, when this list, printed list, when you disable by crossing the number you have used for online e-banking, still were a reasonable tool. Then some people were thinking this list is not convenient. They were typing this in the computer that they could use it any time. And the hacker found this list and made money out of it. Crisis. banks lost money because they reimbursed. And then it was really the opportunity was that this bank had, after 1 year, the most secure and the best e-banking system, I think, all over the place. I don't know anything which is comparable. And then have all this much, much lower loss in the future than any other bank. They won. Another thing which is media communication related. Do you lose all trust when you have an incident? Swiss Air, an airline which doesn't exist anymore, lost in 2001, I think, in Halifax, a plane. Then they were reimbursing the families of the dead ones, 300 dead ones, each one by 100,000 euro, by a million kroner. Before anything started, next day, everybody, every family got this money. And they communicated truthfully, and they expected a downside of booking numbers. But the booking increased. Why? Because people said, look, any airline loses time by time a plane. But if I have a problem, this airline pays, not 3 years later after all court cases, they immediately give money for survival of the family until it's reorganized. And the lawyers, of course, said, yeah, this is not final. And the airline said, that's fine, we know it's not final, but people need it now. And the bookings numbers were going up. So with communication, with honest behavior, you can have impact. So a crisis is like the Chinese sign of crisis. It's a downside and upside. It's an opportunity. And you have the choice how to react. Of course, it sounds sometimes a little bit weird, but I think to have this downside only perspective is not a good motivator to deal with crises. When you see also the opportunity in it, it's completely different, and I think it's another motivation. Here was a communication professional. Extremely well decorated afterwards, already before very experienced. I mean that there are like 5 points in media communication, very well known are these points that first, you are truthful only, no exaggeration, no putting it down. Then you give information as you know more, time by time, don't hide anything. Then you isolate it down to what has happened. Not saying, we have a big problem in our company. The very specific, this has happened only in this part of the company, and this is it. So reduce it to the effective incident, and not saying everything is wrong. Then say that it started the learning process, that this will never happen again, and make it credible, reimburse the people, and when you have these 5 points properly, then not much can happen. And when you see and observe in the media, always the same 5 points. Very clearly, yes, it has happened. You say the next time point of more information. You isolate it down to the really known incident and not more. show, you demonstrate that you participate is the concerned one. And you will see later that there is also a trick that I don't know why, but visit of the top is required. After George Bush completely confused in the 9/11 case and not taking any notice of the incident, this was so much in the media that he didn't understand and didn't react at all, that today each major incident the president himself goes and makes a visit. Whether it makes sense or not, but it's obviously something you can avoid bigger obstacle afterwards if the top is there. And you read it also in the book that this is a requirement, that this is a non-delegatable task of the top. That's also why I say the CEO should not be the operational manager, because he needs for such purposes time. Then psychologists, of course, dealing with making information and so on, completely different different profiles than the other one before. Should establish a base of operational command center near the site of disaster as soon as possible. Should include individuals from all function areas of the organization in order to facilitate communication and cooperation. And the three primary tasks are verifying personal status, activating the alert rooster, the list of people dealing with this, coordinating with the emergency services. Business resumption, you remember? What is business resumption? Yes, and is it for larger or little enterprises? Yeah. It's the combination of disaster recovery and business continuity. I don't think we should go too much into this detail here. You have also a plan here where you see everything inside. I think it's because we already discussed high level, the low level, you can really go into it. Based in contingency plan, very few plans are executable as initially written. Instead, they must be tested to identify vulnerability faults and inefficient processes. These are tabletop exercises, real exercises. You probably have in Norway, like in Switzerland, that you need a first aid course when you are a driver. Do you need this? Can you make a driver license without first aid course? No, so you need it. Is any repetition needed? Do you still remember everything? Forget it. So it's an initial not tested identifier and so on. This is not made. The four testing strategies that can be used: desk check, structured walkthrough with other experts like comparable enterprises, simulation games, full interruption. To simulation, there is also always a scenario. And scenarios must be developed for such things. We have developed for the national crisis exercise 2001 in Switzerland called Informo, the crisis plan. And the task was to have incidents which could happen in the next 6 months, but are projected into 5 years into the future. I invited my assistant in a very nice hotel, Lakeside Lucerne, very beautiful, it was a beautiful day, and we were sitting there and discussing a half a day off campus, everything, and had a lot of fun. The exercise took place. 6 months later, all five main scenarios have happened. All five. Then the Federal Strategic Unit came to me and said, it's incredible, never happened before. Gave me a task to make scenarios in 5 to 8 years from now. And they were so ugly, they really didn't want to know more about this. Did they happen? Quite. But more is coming. One thing of this I can share with you. What we did is that internet was not misused, that internet was used in the way as it should be, but from the wrong party. And partly you have this scenario by IS recruiting, that they use the internet and get echo. And other parties which are on the bad side can use the internet to inform people in a way the official channel don't want it. Final thoughts on crisis planning. Iteration results in improvement. Iteration results in improvement. On the testing, yes. A formal implementation of this methodology is a process known as continuous process improvement, CPI. This is all this quality management thinking. You start at any place. If you improve it every time, at the end it's good. Each time the plan is rehearsed, it should be improved. Constant evaluation and improvement leads to an improvement outcome. An improved outcome, yes, this is what it's about. And the last part, the last few slides are about managing investigation in organization. What type of units are in managing investigation? What type of competencies you need? It's digital forensic, track number 3. When not if an organization finds itself having deemed the suspected policy or law violation, they must appoint an individual to investigate it. And how the internal investigation proceeds will dictate whether or not the organization has the ability to take action against the perpetrator if in fact evidence is found that substantiates the charge. And in order to protect the organization and the possibility to assist law enforcement in the conduct of an investigation, the investigator, CISO, INSEC manager, or others, must act to document what happened and how. Sounds very easy. Do you know about the psychological profile on perpetrators, how much they differ from top managers? It's the same. Both are risk taker. Otherwise you can't do the job. It's the same psychological profile. Crooks, criminals, and top level managers. And not by coincidence, more top-level managers have been disclosed to be criminals. Read this again and think about what you do when your top manager is criminal. how you prepare the case, how you make it that you are not out of the company before you even started to send your report anywhere. You must act to document what happened and how. You must be very, very clear and very specific, and when you go after a top manager to disclose this. I think it's nearly a miracle how many already failed top manager, and it was in public health. And then they are those which make self-murder at some point in time because they cannot withstand all this. Digital forensic is the coherent application of methodological investigatory techniques to present evidence of crimes in a court or in a court-like situation. So the goal is to be court-proof. But it's necessary or not is another question. I think not everything which is court-proof goes to court. For sure not, but it should be. And what are the tasks? Preservation, identification, extraction, documentation, and interpretation of computer media for evidentiary and or root cause analysis. Evidentiary, it creates evidence, it shows really traceable and logical what has happened. Like traditional forensic, it follows clear, well-defined methodologies, but still tends to be as much art as science. Why art? What is the art in digital forensics? The art is probably that finding in all these lots of data the right elements to make a chain of proof which is unbreakable and court-proof. This is the art. It's not a needle in a haystack. It's probably a few atoms in a haystack you have to find. And a lot of intuition, a lot of things you use besides a lot of tools, you must be very, very well, very familiar with. And then anything which is policy violation that could be used against the subject must be prepared. And any item does not become evidence until it is formally admitted to evidence by a judge or other ruling officials. What does it mean? What does it mean, this sentence? It might be court evident, but the other word here is probably more important. Formally admitted. Formally admitted. So American court have clear rules what is admitted as evidence. So you can have a perfect chain of evidence, but the way how you were gathering the data was not legal, and then it's not evident. Or it's out of other reasons, because you violated the privacy of this guy, you cannot use it. There are a lot of conditions in American courts. I think we are in Norway and Switzerland much more flexible on evidence. So is a phone recording something you can use, or could be this fake? And is a video sequence something you can use when you know how easy it is to cheat a video sequence? Even the American need it when this job head off videos needed like a week or 10 days until they could say that this is really an original video or not. So if it's a video cam, you have a consistent process of this video cam. You have Macs which are giving authentication, then it's a little bit different. But it's really something which you should thought of. Two key purposes: to investigate allegations of digital malfeasance and to perform root cause analysis. The first one, malfeasance, a crime against or using digital media, computer technology or related company, is referred to as digital malfeasance. So something which was malfunctioning. And then the other one is the root cause analysis, that you really can prove what has happened. Many investigation begins with an allegation or an indication of an incident. Somewhere is the origin which allows you to start something. Without this, you are not allowed to start. In law enforcement, investigation agent would create an affidavit request or requesting a search warrant, and then you can start. When an approving authority signs the affidavit or creates a synopsis form based on this document, it becomes a search warrant and grants permission to search for evidence material at a specified location and or size of the items to return to the investigator's labs for examination. So without this court order-like, because court order is a well-defined term, situation, starting an investigation is not really possible. But how you prepare the material to get this allegation? This is before, and this is where I said if it's against high-level manager, you have to be really very, very careful. And this is the big idea. And then the names of the documents may be a little bit different from company to company, and how the permission is given. What is the methodology used in digital forensics? Identify relevant items of evidentiary value. This is EM. Acquire the evidence without alteration or damage. So it must be original. Even if you hash an operating system and you restart it again, the hash is lost. Because already system file have been changed and so on. So you need like two or three copies and with the original state that you can verify out of this when you start it as the same happened again and again. Take steps to assure that the evidence is at every step verifiable, authentic, and is unchanged from time it was sized. This is very, very difficult when it's dynamic, when it's in storage. Analyze the data without risking modification or unauthorized access, and report the findings to the proper authority. And if it's the authority itself, it gets really difficult. And you know from American movie series that all these authorities are also exposed to crime. This is the process. Policy violation or crime detected. Then you get the court order-like authorization. Investigation authorized, no, it goes to the archive, yes, collect evidence, and then you take also the security incident triggers, analyze the evidence, produce the report, and then archive it. And here, of course, which could be also court or other decisions in between, that it's not only a filed report. Evidentiary policy and procedures. These are the questions you can deal with. And I don't think I go through this list. It's too complicated. Then I think one of the very last topics is the law enforcement involvement. When you have something happening in your enterprise and it's relevant for law enforcement and you have to cooperate, you have to be very careful that this cooperation is well functioning. And I think this is a very essential part, and many enterprises are not prepared or would fail in many ways to cooperate with police officials. So when I was doing term paper in this topic with students, what they came up that an engagement before you have the first case is very important, that you know how they function, what to share, with whom you share, and how everything is going. Let's see what they have, what they recommend. Selecting the appropriate law enforcement agent depends on the type of crime, federal, state, or local. I think this is Fylke, national, or community is here the same. Then, thanks for joining. Feel free, and hope you are next time with us. And Marie-Meur, we have three different speakers next time. It's very worthwhile to come. Enjoy your evening. I think we are in a few minutes anyway. Yeah, it's okay. Thank you. Involving law enforcement has both advantages and disadvantages. We are very aware that the control of the incident is given somehow away. And you cannot say what the authorities are doing when they are going public and so on. This is very difficult. So this was it. The summary, I think I leave it to you. And I feel that that you are a little bit tired. What I would suggest that you don't start a new chapter, but probably that if you have questions or something, that we can discuss it a little bit. Yeah. This is not completely wrong, because they do it anyway. Actually, I was imprecise, and this is where you struggle. Business resumption is disaster recovery planning and business continuity management. So those two parts. This is business resumption. Whether you do it in two part or in one part, it's always business resumption. So large scale enterprise and little enterprise are doing it. But the title business resumption planning and business resumption as activity in a common one document, not separated, is more for small enterprises. So you are right as well, but I think the book was very much stating this, that it's more on lower end, smaller enterprises. You take those two together. Yes, that you do it in one. And if I ask only business resumption, then you can say it's for all enterprise, because all enterprise are doing it, but the business resumption plan only containing both at one time, this is more for small enterprises. You are right. Should be more specific. Other questions? Not really. Do you recommend to start next time, which is for us? I will be here on the 14th and following the lecture like you do, more or less as a student, but also knowing a little bit how it works with the external lecturer. I have them to leave an hour early because there was a coming conference that they want me as a VIP roundtable in Berlin next day, so I have to go at 3 o'clock. But anyway, discussing this last time, you want that we start again with repetition. This is okay for all of you. Okay. So we make a repetition of this. And I look whether I make both chapter next time or reduce to one chapter and then a little bit of discussion. And so there is one about personal security and one about ethics. Whether I skip one of those chapters and then it's also not in the scope of the exam. What? Most likely to be this one. And then I have some time to discuss about examination, about means you can use. I don't know whether we already said about means, but I think we have to reflect this and then to communicate properly so that a reasonable exam is possible. The less means you have, the more you need to know the overview and less specific, otherwise I have to give you the specific. I think the learning strategy must be latest on the 28th of November, finally that you can learn properly. Delivering the term paper on 23rd, there is no problem at the moment. So you have 3 more weeks. If I would do it late, then it would collide also a little bit with the learning phase, which is not really fair. Is this true or? Yeah. It's fine, yeah. So we leave it on this as pre-announced and everybody could arrange for this. I think this is reasonable. Is there anything else you want to share with me about the lecture? Very long days. Yeah. You know it. The first initial study. I think for the next year this is very reasonable. But you know, I'm also training now with this course, first time with this book, and it needs a little bit time, and I think to have a reasonable form of presentation is the first step, and then we can go more in depth. The enhancements that I bring, additional personal experience, is this welcome or is it too much? Yeah, to make it more understandable also for you. Okay. Yeah. So then we continue a little bit, but it will not remain a lot because I think we should have next time at least half an hour that we can discuss the exam. I make some practical examples, and then there will be a 2-hour lecture of Jose Gonzalez, last time, for the system dynamics elective, and governance with Laura together, and then we have basically up to lunchtime, something like this, and after these 2 hours or something, we make lecture. Yeah. So next time we are together on the 28th. So, and thanks for joining. Hopefully you are the next 2 times here again, and probably some others. Of course, with the camera, it's easier to follow when you have to travel long time. But still, I believe that there is some amount of discussion and encouragement which goes beyond looking TV.